One of the great lights that shone throughout the Holocaust and afterwards was the man we're going to discuss tonight. Anak sheba anakim, a giant among giants, Rav Yisrael Zev Gusman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Zchus Yagen Aleinu. Rav Gusman had a vort on the pasuk at Eicha. Pasuk says, Yisomim hayinu ve'ein av. We were orphaned without a father. So Rav Gusman wonders, he says, it doesn't make sense. If a person, Rachmana Litzlan, is an orphan, then obviously, ein av, then they don't have a father. So what does it mean, Yisomim hayinu ve'ein av? So Rav Gusman said, he said a person could be a yasom, lo aleinu, could lose their father, but they have wonderful memories of that person. They have a great legacy to carry on. When they think of that person, they have warm feelings and inspiration. That person is a yasom, but at least yesh av. They had a father. They had someone they looked up to, they connected to. And then you could have a person, lo aleinu, who is a yasom, who is an orphan, ve'ein av. Their father passed on before they even knew them. So they don't even have any memories. They don't even have any connection. So it says that's what the Pasuk is Eicha is saying. So Rav Gusman, apparently, he said this, he used to say this in Israel after the war. He said, Yisomim hayinu ve'ein av. We are a dor yasom, we're an orphan generation from the great giants that were before the war. Ve'in av, says Rav Gusman, we don't have any hasaga, any grasp of the level of the greatness of these people. So apparently, Rav Simcha Zissel Broidy, the late Chevron of Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva of Knesset Yisrael, once took on Rav Gusman. He said, what do you mean? In every generation, you have the Talmidei Chachamim, the Manhigim of that door. Rav Gusman said, it's true? But he shook his head. He said, you can't. He said, the disparity, we say in Hebrew, the par between the great Gaonim that he knew from after the war, from those he said were before the war, he says, it's begeder yisomim hayinu v'ein. And Rav Gusman was from that generation, from that door. He was from the Gedolim, from the Anakim of the previous door. Born in 1908 in Bialystok, his father was a Talmud Chacham and a lumber merchant. He was recognized at a young age as being an unbelievable gaon, an incredibly gifted and assiduous masmid. So he learned when he was young in a town, in a yeshiva, in a place called Grodno. Grodno was a small town in the northern edge of Poland. There he met some very famous rabbinic personalities, and he studied under one of the most significant and influential giants of Torah learning of the pre-war generation, a man by the name of Rav Shimon Yehuda HaKohen Shkop. His nickname is, everybody knows him as, Rib Shimon. And for the entirety of his life, Rav Gusman viewed himself as a Talmud of Rib Shimon Shkop from Grodno. He was such an outstanding, unbelievable, bright light. He was taken as a son-in-law by a man by the name of Rav Besson, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in a yeshiva in Vilna. The yeshiva was known as Ramelez. Now, Ramelez, it's not clear exactly why it was called Ramelez. It was probably named after some kind of benefactor whose name something sounded like Ramelez or Rav Moshe, something like that. That was not the name of the place the yeshiva was in Vilna. And the Rosh Yeshiva was also a member. Can I be mafria you just to get that? Thank you. Shkach. Was also a member of the Bezdin in Vilna of Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So you have to remember, the nickname of Vilna before the war, anybody know what the nickname of Vilna was? Yerushalayim Delita. It was like the Torah scholarship capital of the world, in a certain sense. After the passing of the Chavetz Chaim in 1933 in Radin, who was the undisputed rabbinic leader of world Jewry? Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski, the dying of Abbezin in Vilna. When the war broke out, who took responsibility for all the yeshiva bachrim under the Soviet control? He told them all to come to Vilna, he's going to take care of them. It was Rav Chaim Ozer, who was answering shilas around the world, including places in the United States. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski. Could you imagine that Rav Gusman was not even 22 years old when his father-in-law passed away just when they were getting married, and he was invited to be the Rosh Yeshiva of the Romulus Yeshiva and to be a dayan on Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski's Beis Din? It is unimaginable what that would be like. Parenthetically, later in his life, unfortunately, it was some unsavory, unscrupulous character who tried to convince Rav Gusman to do some kind of hashkacha work that he didn't think was appropriate. And he told them, I'm not going to participate in this project. They said, no, we'll give you a lot of money, we'll give you a lot of kavod. He said to the man, let me tell you something. Nobody can ever debase me more than I have been debased in my life. And nobody can ever honor me more than I have been honored in my life. Because when I walked into a room one time, when Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski was there before me, he stood up when I walked in the room. So don't tell me you're going to be mechabed me with your hashgacha project. This was like an anak sheba anakim. And that meant that he was like a colleague of some of the greatest rabbinic names, that if you were to open up a who's who of the 20th century of Torah luminaries, both in Europe and in Israel, so this would be, you know, the Chaver. It's Maisa Shahaya, Kachaya. There was a man, is known as the Chibina Rav, the author of the Tshuvas, the Dovig Meisharim. So he came from Europe, he ended up in Israel, so someone was corresponding with him from Vilna, but he had never met this man. After the war, Rav Gusman comes and meets the Chibina Rav. So the Chibina Rav starts talking to him and learning, and somehow it's like trying to figure out who he is. So he says, who are you? So he says, I'm Gusman from Vilna. So Chibina looks at him, he says, so were you on the Beis Din with Rav Chaim Ozer before the war? He says, it was my father. The Shemina says, no, it doesn't seem right. Maybe it was your uncle? He said, no, it wasn't my uncle. He said, it was me. It was him. As a 25-year-old, he's corresponding with the Shemina Rav about everything. Later in life, when he came to Israel, he became a close chaver of many, many gedolim in Israel. So one of his chaverim, who he would talk to in learning, was Rav Avram Shapira, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. I had a great, amazing schus. We talk about people who you saw. When I was a kid, when I went to KBY, so I used to go to Yerushalayim to visit my grandmother, Aleha Shalom. So she lived right around the corner from Merkaz Harav. So I used to go to Merkaz Harav, and I got to meet several times Rav Shapira. So Rav Avram Shapira, when I met him, he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav. Before that, he was the Rav HaRashi LeYisrael. And Rav Gusman and he used to talk and learning all the time. They were very good friends. So apparently, Rav Avram had the following maisa. When Rav Avram was the chief rabbi, there was some major meeting in the chief rabbi's office in Heichal Shlomo. And Rav Gusman called Heichal Shlomo and said, I need to speak to Rav Avram. It's very urgent. So the secretary said, I'm sorry to tell you, he's in a meeting of the Vad HaRabbanim that they're discussing some important issues. I don't know if I can disturb him. He said, look, you just have to please go tell Rav Avram that Yisrael Zev Gusman is on the phone and he has something very urgent to discuss with you. It's the secretary. Okay. So she goes, she knocks on the door, she goes over to Rabbi Avram, and she says that there's a man, Yisrael Zev Gusman, on the phone, who says he has something very urgent to talk to you about. So Rabbi Avram says, Rav Gusman's on the phone, so he gets up, he leaves the meeting, he runs out, he picks up the telephone. Rav Gusman's on the other line. What's the urgent issue? Rav Gusman says, you know, we were talking about this Rashi, and we didn't figure out the pshat in the Rashi. Last night, I figured it out, and this morning, I think I have the pshat. So Rav Avram goes back and forth with him on the phone for 5 minutes. He puts down the phone, he comes back to the meeting. He says to all the Rabbanim, Kvod HaRabbanim, I have to tell you what happened. So it was Rav Gusman on the phone, and it was a very urgent matter, because Rav Gusman figured out the pshat in the Rashi, and for him, that is an urgent matter. So that's why I had to step out from the phone. Because they were like colleagues and friends. Apparently, one of the Maislach that I read many different stories. I could regale you on it. It's unbelievable. Of the colleagues that he had, he was very close to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Some of the medical halacha shilas that we are familiar with now in 2022 that have been answered over the past decades were dealt with by Rav Gusman, who's quoted many times in Asya, and Rav Shlomo Zalman, and they worked together on certain projects. So apparently, they got into a bit of an argument with one of the Talmidim, because there was a wedding. One of the boys was getting married. One of the Talmidim Bachram was getting married in Yerushalayim. And one guy got the schus. He was, his job, he was responsible to pick up Rav Gusman and Rav Shlomo Zalman for this wedding. But he didn't know what to do, because they got into a fight as to which one should get picked up first. Because Rav Gusman insisted, he says, I have to get picked up first. Because it's not right that Rav Shlomo Zalman should sit in the car and wait for me. Rav Shlomo Zalman told the boy, he says, no, you have to understand, you have to pick me up first, because it's not right that Rav Gusman should sit in the car and wait while you come to get me from the door. Because they were like best friends. This is the circle. These are the people that we're talking about. How did he end up in America? What happened was, we'll talk a little bit later, unfortunately, of what he experienced, lo aleinu, in the war. After the war, he actually came back to Vilna. And over the 100,000 Jews that had existed before the war in Vilna, about 1,000 remained. So he tried to build back the community and serve as a rabbi and deal with all kinds of very, very difficult challenges, as you can imagine. And then one night he gets a knock on the door, and someone tips him off and says, Rav Gusman, you should know, some of the Stalin Chevra, they got your name, and they are interested in talking to you. So you gotta get out right away. Otherwise, who knows what's going to happen. So Rav Gusman immediately left Vilna, went into hiding. Who brought him to America? Rav Aaron Cutler. Who set him up with his first job? Rav Moshe Feinstein. Like, these are just, you know, the people in the neighborhood. Unbelievable. Rav Gusman was a titanic Torah personality. To speak about Hasmada, like, I was getting such chalishas hadas, like, to think, obviously, I'm not even in the same stratosphere, but, like, I was thinking about how far away, even, like, just amazing. Rav Gusman, when he was learning in Grodno, one of the older Bachrim, who shortly then got married to the daughter of the Mir Rosh Hashiva, his name was Chaim, also known as Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz. So Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz had unbelievable hasmada, and a lot of people were knocking on his door for chavrusas, but he had a full slate and he wasn't taking anybody on for his chavrusa. But at one point, he decided he wanted to learn with this young prodigy, with Rav Gusman. So Rav Gusman said to him, I think he was 12 years old at the time, he said, I'm sorry, I'm booked. I'm booked till 1 o'clock in the morning. So Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz said, no problem, I'll wake you at 2, and then we'll learn from then till Shacharis. The Kachava. So they used to learn till Shacharis, and then they didn't daven in the yeshiva, they davened with a group of balabatim, and they came to Seder at like 9 o'clock, a few minutes late. At one point, the Mashgiach was yelling at them, why are you showing up late? And they made a pact, they made a promise to each other that they were not going to tell anyone. So they said to the Mashgiach, you know, we're tired, we're sleeping a little bit late, we're davening with the balabatim. And apparently, when Rav Gusman related this story years later, he was relating the story saying, I don't know how Reb Chaim, how he went without sleep. How did he do it all those years? And then the person who was listening to the story from Rav Guzman was looking at him saying, so you went on an hour and a half of sleep, and that's like... he would give a shir klali in his yeshiva. Now, if you look at the photograph on your picture, you see on the bottom a building that maybe some of you recognize. It's the corner of Ramban and Ibn Ezra. Beautiful, big, beautiful building in Yerushalayim. That was Rav Guzman's yeshiva. Right? He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Ramelis before the war. After that, he came to New York. He was a Rebbe for a while. Then he established his own yeshiva. And ultimately, after about 20 years, he made Aliyah. He moved to Israel in 1971, and he established the Ramelis yeshiva in Rehavia. It's in that beautiful building. Some of you have seen it. You recognize the building. So he used to give a shir klali once a week. People from all over the neighborhood came. Not only were the Talmidim, the yeshiva, and the Kol Yungalai, but professors would come to the shir, as we'll talk about a little bit later, public intellectuals, all kinds of people, because it was so brilliant. The night before the shir, Rav Guzman would stay up every week, all night, learning, preparing the shir. He would skip breakfast, he would daven, skip breakfast, and learn straight till the shir, so he was ready, 11 o'clock. And he couldn't understand. The shir was 3 hours long. Why the boys needed a break during the shir? Couldn't figure it out. Like, it's only 3 hours. I mean, he's been going since the night before. He published shiurim. They're called Kuntrasei Shiurim. The first one, I think, was published in 1966. He subsequently published a few other volumes, and one or two of them were published posthumously. One of the very sad and tragic things, believe it or not, and you will see this inside one of the volumes, is that after he passed away, somebody stole a group of cassette tapes and notes that he had of his shiurim. There's actually a letter in the second edition of the Kuntrasei Shiurim from Rav Eliashiv, a public letter, and then a letter from the Beis Din of the Eidah Charedis saying whoever has these tapes and notes must al pi din give them back to the Yorshim. We'll talk about it a little bit later. He had one daughter who married a Rosh Yeshiva of Michal Berniker, I think was his name, passed away. So that is a whole separate crazy mindset, but you might have come across this story that somebody actually took the notes of some of his shiurim. His Kuntrasei Shiurim, they are absolutely mind-blowing. They are intricate works of genius. How he puts together every detail in the sugya. So these are like very, very complex analyses of what you might think is a simple topic, like the topic of Shutfin. Apparently he spent, 10 shiurim or something, developing what exactly are the halachic parameters of the concept of partnership. Something like that. So these are really, really unbelievably complex and interwoven topics. Amazing works of just Gaonus, of rabbinic genius. But they're the product of unbelievable hasmada. I forget who it was, and this story, I'm sorry, I don't remember who it involved. There was a certain Talmud Chacham who had gotten a copy of the Kuntrasei Shiurim and said, saw him in the street and said, I saw you had 7 approaches in the Rishonim to this particular topic. I'm going to go and see if there are any others. So he said he went home. I forget who this story was with. And he said after a couple of hours looking through the sugya, he said, yeah, you have exhausted every possible avenue of understanding this topic. That's how thorough he was. And so his breadth of knowledge was remarkable. And at the same time, it wasn't just lumdus, it was also practical halacha. Because think about it, he was a dayan, which meant he was paskening practical shilas. So Rav Mordechai Halperin, who is the head of the Asya Journal, if some of you have heard of this, there's a medical halacha journal in Israel. It's a very important journal called Asya. I think he's the head of the Schlesinger Medical Halacha Institute. So he has written many books and articles on medical halacha. So one of the people that he used to ask was Rav Guzman for practical medical halacha shaila. So for example, here's a shaila that Rav Guzman opined on that has very, very wide-ranging applications and ramifications. Halacha lemaisa, it's used all the time today in the realm of infertility. So there are a lot of different aspects to questions in halacha and infertility, but one of the biggest issues and sometimes one of the trickiest challenges is something called sperm procurement. So how does a person test for, or then afterwards procure, a semen specimen, a sperm specimen, to figure out what could be the poriut problem? Poriut is the modern Hebrew term for fertility. So there are a lot of halachic questions in this area. One of the biggest issues in sperm procurement has to do with what we call hashchosas zera, the destruction of seed. So there's a big machlokas in the Rishonim and in the Poskim. What is the nature of hashchosas zera? Do you say, conceptually, that hashchosas zera, there's a Gemara in Nida and Daf Yud Gimel that speaks about the seriousness of this iser, it is an independent, standalone prohibition? Or do you say that hashchosas zera is a subsidiary, it's a derivative of a primary responsibility of a mitzvah kiyumis, chiyuvis, of pru revu? The reason why you're not allowed to waste seed is because it's supposed to be used for the purpose of pru revu. What's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is going to be, what about wasting or using sperm if it's for the purpose of trying to help this couple conceive? If you understand that it's a standalone prohibition, so then it's going to be separate and you're going to have to deal with it using the regular rules of how to deal with Isurim when you're trying to get to. But generally in halacha, you don't say, oh, the ends justify the means, unless it's asido halosa say, or be'idna, or other things. Like, you have to set it up. As opposed to, said Rav Gusman, he says, I know from my Bezdin, from Reb Chaim Ozer Krasensky, so he doesn't have to tell you, look in the Tshuvas Achiezer, because you can look in the Tshuvas Achiezer, but he could tell you, I heard from Reb Chaim Ozer, that Reb Chaim Ozer, before the war, he paskined that the Isra of Hashchas Hazera is a derivative of the mitzvah of Pru Revu. Memela, you're going to be much more lenient when it comes to sperm procurement and those types of procedures when they're for the purpose of helping a couple deal with fertility. Because the whole point of it is so they should be Mekayim Pru Revu. So this was a practical halachic ruling that Rav Gusman gave to Rav Halperin to guide the different procedures as it relates to infertility. And he's tracing that back to Rav Chaim Ozer. So there is a rabbi in our community, his name is Rabbi Moshe Simkovich. He studied in the Kollel with Rav Gusman, and he shared with me several insights and stories. And he told me, he said, just being in the presence of someone who you knew was a direct link in the chain of Masora, like this man was on the Beznin of Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski, he said that alone was just such a powerful experience. So when Rav Gusman was paskening, he was using that entire life experience that he brought with him. Aside from the fact, and this is just parenthetical, that many, many people turned to him for advice and for guidance. Many stories about people who came to him for shalom bayis issues. He had a very extraordinary relationship with his wife and a great respect for her and love for her and appreciation for her. So people turned to him for hadracha as, you know, young married couples. People turned to him for life guidance, all different kinds of things. One special quality about Rav Gusman, we already alluded to, was his appreciation for Eretz Yisrael. It was a dream of his that he realized in 1971 when he came to Israel on Aliyah. That was a big deal. He wrote in a letter to a student, he says, I'm really encouraging you to come to Israel, because as much as we can learn and do mitzvahs in America, he says, you can't compare. You can't compare the ability to learn Torah and do mitzvot in Israel. It's totally incomparable. It's not the same. And he appreciated this, especially because of the life that he had experienced. So there was a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshivat HaKotel for many years, the late Rav Hadari. So apparently, there was a military parade that was taking place. I think it was must have been Yom Yerushalayim in the late 70s, that Rav Hadari saw. He went to the military parade for Yom Yerushalayim. He saw Rav Gusman standing in the military parade, watching the parade. And you know, not every time that there is a parade, everybody's dressed the way they were in Bialystok in 1908, let's just say. So Rav Hadari offered to take Rav Guzman home, to drive him home after the parade. So he waited for him, he took him home. So he said to him in the car, he said, you know, can I ask the Rosh Hashiva, like, why, you know, the man who learned for 16 or 18 hours a day is standing and watching a parade in downtown Yerushalayim? So Rav Guzman said to him, he said, what I saw happening to Jewish children with my eyes, to now see Jewish children walking, parading proudly in the streets of Yerushalayim, it's an incredible joy. It's incredible joy to appreciate that element of Israel, of Eretz Yisrael, because of what he had seen. He was a wanted man. You have to remember, because he was on the Bezin of Reb Chaim Ozer, when the Germans showed up in the spring of 1941, he was known. They took all the Rabbanim, they grouped them together, they tortured them bitterly. He described later, he didn't talk about it too much. He witnessed, you know, there was a great Gaon before the war. It was also one of the greatest Gaonim of Lita in Vilna. He was known as the Mar Cheshes. That was the name of his sefer, the Mar Cheshes. His name is Rav Chenoch Henoch Egis. It's interesting, actually, in the early 1900s, Rav Chenoch Henoch Egis was a member of the Mizrahi. He was a very important Rav. And Rav Guzman once related a maisa that he was there when the Germans were beating him, and he was being tortured and whipped, and they had some, I don't know, it was an axe or something that they were hacking away at him. And he said to them, he said, you can't take anything from me. It all comes from Hashem. Rav Guzman said he saw them beat, they saw him beat the Mar Cheshes to death in front of his own eyes. This story is a little difficult. I'll just share it. Rav Guzman was taken out to the Ponary Forest. Some of you know what happened at the Ponary Forest. Rav Elchanan was murdered there, and tens of thousands of Jews. He was taken to the edge of the pit, and he was shot in the head. He fell into the pit, and the Germans thought he was dead. But he wasn't, because the bullet was lodged in his skull. And he picked himself up, and he was able to actually walk back to Vilna and survive. So I'll tell you even a more difficult story. He had his wife, and he had two children. He had a daughter, and he had a son. His name was Meyerka. His son, I think, was 4 years old. And he had a hiding spot for his son in the Vilna ghetto. And then one day, someone from the SS found his son, Meir. And Rav Guzman was holding on to him. And they took the butt of their rifle, this German, and he started. And he killed Meirka Guzman in Rav Guzman's hands, right in front of his own eyes. And he had to do the tahara for his own 4-year-old son, Meirka. And they were so impoverished, they were so hungry, that Rav Guzman sold the shoes that he was wearing so that they could buy some flour. And he said that he wouldn't eat that flour because he couldn't bring it to, he couldn't. But he had some flour, he gave some for his wife and for his daughter. They escaped this whole crazy, unbelievable maisa, because they ultimately escaped from the ghetto and ended up in a forest. So some very kind peasant farmer dug a ditch in his backyard and put the three of them in the ditch for several months and threw some food for them. While he was in the ditch, he chazer Maseches Vachem, I think 20 times Baal Peh. He came out of this ditch. He joined the partisans. I'll tell you about that in a second. But this is the life that he had experienced. So he had this son, Meirka. So let's come back to Israel. One of the intellectuals, a very, very special person I never met, but I've read his and about him, is a Nobel-winning economist by the name of Professor Robert Allman. How many of you have heard of Robert Allman? He got the Nobel Prize, right? I think it's something on game theory. something to do with game theory. So Dr. Alman was a regular, because he lived in the neighborhood, I think Shofet Alon, many, many just interesting, smart Yerushalmi people, just Hele Yidin, Voile Yidin, they would come to Rav Gusman's Shurim. So Dr. Alman in the 70s and the 80s used to come to Rav Gusman's Shur Kloli, he'd come to Shurim. And in 1982, Dr. Alman lost a son in Shlomo Galil. So he described the following maisa. You ready for this? He says that he came back from Har Herzl and he was completely, completely shattered. Here was this beautiful son. I think he was 19 years old or 20 years old. He's gone. And who comes to be Menachem Avil right away? And this is kind of unusual because you know that the first 3 days usually only looks very, very close family. The Gemara says, Moikotin, the first 3 days are Yemei Bechi. Today it's a little different because of travel and things like that. But it used to be in the times of the Gemara, nobody came for the first 3 days unless you were family or very, very close friends. So apparently Rav Gusman came the first day right when they got back. And Rav Gusman sat down with him and he said to Dr. Alman, he said, can I sit with you on the floor? So Dr. Alman says, Rav Shiva, of course. He's still on the floor. So he sits there for a few minutes. He says, you know, this helps me. It makes me feel better. Says Dr. Alman, because you know, when my son was taken away from me to the other world, I never got to sit Shiva. So if I could sit with you, you sit for your son, I could sit for my son a little bit. So he's sitting there. And then he says to Dr. Alman, he says, you know, I believe that in the Yeshiva Shalmaila, there is a minyan. There's a minyan, a big minyan for all the tzaddikim. So my son and your son are in the same minyan. He says, but your son is the chazan. Your son is the shliach tzibur. Because both of our sons were killed al kiddush Hashem. My Meirka, my four-year-old son, this little tzaddik, and your son was killed al kiddush Hashem. But your son was killed al kiddush Hashem wearing the uniform of the state of Israel, fighting for the Jewish state, protecting the Jewish people, Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. So your son is the chazan for our minyan. Rav Gusman said, I really appreciate you letting me sit with you. Hamakom, and he left. Dr. Alman said later, he said he never thought that anything could lift him up at that moment. Nothing could console him in any measure. But Rav Gusman, he said, it touched him and it comforted him. This was his perspective. To see the land, the state, the people. That was his perspective. He escapes, ends up in the forest. But you know that most partisans, except for the Bielskis, most partisans, you couldn't join the partisans unless you, any guesses? You know? What was a prerequisite for joining partisans in the forest? Any idea? You didn't actually have to kill somebody, but close. You needed a gun. They were not interested in taking just refugees. If you couldn't fight, you couldn't join the partisan group. So if Gusman was wandering around in the forest, one more parenthetical maisa. It's well known, and there are different versions of this story. Rav Gusman was the gardener of the yeshiva in Rehavia. He was the gardener. Why was he the gardener? So he told students slight different versions of the same point, that before the war, he once went on a walk with Reb Chaim Moser Grzensky, and Reb Chaim Moser said to him, you see that plant? You can eat that plant. They went in the forest somewhere. They went for a walk. And at the time, Rav Gusman thought it was bizarre. Why is Reb Chaim Moser telling him, you can eat this and you can eat that? So he said, because when they found themselves in the forest, there was a point where they only had one pea, and he had to split the pea and decide whether he should eat a piece of it or only his wife and his daughter should have the pea. It was mamish starving. But when they found this tree, he remembered, oh, Reb Chaim Moser said, you can eat this tree. This is not poisonous. This is healthy. So out of Hakaras HaTov for the trees and the shrubs and the grass, he was the ganan of the yeshiva. He watered the plants in the yeshiva. To another Talmud, he told the reason why he's the gardener is because the Rebbetzin likes the flowers a certain way, and that's why he wants to take care of it. Or another version was that he was hiding behind a certain bush at one point in the forest, so out of hakaras hatov for the bushes, he was the gardener of the yeshiva. Amazing. So he's in the forest, but he can't join the partisans. But he describes, he says, that at one point there was a German soldier who had gotten lost in the forest, and he was hiding. And this man, who had just been living in a pit for months, who had been chazring zvachim balpeh, says that he was mekayim the mitzvah of mechias amalek with his bare hands. He said he surprised, jumped the guy, and killed him with his bare hands. Could you imagine? He kills the guy, he takes his bayonet, and he goes to join the partisans. So he joins the partisans. Survives the war with the partisans fighting in the forest, then comes back to Vilna after the war, where he tries to help people. Just unbelievable. But in truth, from these Maislach, you should just know, this is very, very few and far between. Because people asked him if he would talk about it, and he said he didn't want to talk about it. He said he didn't want to talk about it. Someone was really, really asking him. He said, I can't talk about it, but I can just tell you this. Every time I go to sleep at night, I see my son Merica and I see his shoes. Every night I see the shoes. So to grasp and think about this Gaon and what he lived through and what he accomplished and what he built, and yet how he had the Simchas HaChaim and the sensitivity and the emotional intelligence to raise a door of Talmidim and individuals. Rabbi Simkovich, he told me that when he was there in the 70s, at one point one of the Bachrim went to Rav Gusman and he said that the smoking, it bothered him. It kind of bothered him. Now, most of you in this room, I'm not as old as everybody, and you remember a time when probably smoking was different than it is now, right? In the 70s, was there a yeshiva where anybody was not smoking in the 70s? Every yeshiva, everybody was smoking. Something tells me. Except Telz. Okay, there was no smoking in Telz. In Yerushalayim, right? In the Mir Yeshiva, in every yeshiva, everybody was smoking. The next morning, Rav Gusman gets up in the yeshiva and he says, Chevra, Bachrim, from now on, there will be no more smoking in the Beis Medrash. Because one Talmud, it bothers him. One Talmud, it bothers him. When he passed away in 1991, there were tens of thousands of people who followed him to Har HaZeisim to give him a kavod achron for a man who, he was a gadol sheba anakim of that previous door. That's what's just so unbelievable. And I'll end with one maisa, because it's getting late. Rabbi Simkovich said that this maisa took place, he heard it from the guy, the Bala maisa. This was the previous maisa, some of them he had himself. This he heard from a guy who was the Bala maisa. And this story will help encapsulate maybe two of these major themes of Rav Gusman's life after the war, of his hasmada, his incredible greatness in learning, and also his love of Israel. That during the Yom Kippur War, there was, it's a crazy story, a dentist goes to Shaarei Tzedek to volunteer, to take care of Nebuch wounded soldiers who ended up in the hospital. So he's sitting in the waiting room, and this dentist says that there was another volunteer there. Looked like a rabbi, had a beard, didn't know anything about him, never met him, doesn't know anything about him. But they're sitting there, and it's late at night, and it started to quiet down. So the dentist is sitting there, and this rabbi, looks like a rabbi, is sitting there. So they strike up a conversation. So he asks, small talk, and then And then the gentleman says to the dentist, he says, so do you learn at all? So he says, yeah, I'm learning Maseches Kiddushin. I'm learning Gemara Kiddushin. So Rukam says, oh, that's great. So, you know, we have some time. We're not busy. Maybe we can learn a little bit. So the guy says, I would love to learn, but have you seen a Gemara? He says, it's okay, I'll share it with you. So he starts going line by line. Where are you up to? Picks it up, daf, starts the first line, the next line goes through the whole daf. So Rav Gusman says to him, do you do Rashi? He says, yeah, I usually do Rashi. So he says, yeah, so we should do the Rashi. We did the page, we should do the Rashi. Finishes the Rashi, says to him, so do you do the Tosfos also? He says, well, I tried to do the Tosfos. So Rav Gusman says, let's go through the Tosfos. Then he says to him, so do you analyze what you learn? He says, a few hours later, Rav Gusman finished the shiur, and the dentist gets up, and they go their own way. So he says to him, he's like, what? Who? How? Someone says, oh, that was Rav Yisrael Zev Gusman. Sitting at midnight in a Shari Tzedek hospital, in a waiting room to take care of broken Israeli soldiers, chazaring a random blot in Kiddushin, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Baal Peh, with the 3-hour shiur to go with it on the spot. This is Rav Gusman. Gadol Sheba Anakim. So when we say Yisomim Hayinu Ve'ein Av, I would say B'Mechilas Kvod Rav Gusman, we have a Shtikal Av. There is a really wonderful, if you want more, a really wonderful, well-written biography of Rav Gusman called Rav Gusman. The art school biography is a guy by the name of David Page, P-A-G-E, who wrote an excellent biography in English. It's also in Hebrew on Rav Gusman. There are also several articles that you will find, one by Rabbi Ari Khan, I think on aish.com, and a few others that were collected after he passed away. But there's obviously a lot more to say. But Baruch Hashem, at least we feel that we have some shaychas to this giant, this Adam Gadol Shabbat Anakim, Rabbi Yisrael Zev Gusman. So, Tein Nishmas Tzur B'Tzur HaChaim should be a male Yosha for all of us.